Those of you who are on Rick Maston's Words and One-Liners weekly email mailings have already gotten the news. A few weeks ago, after 8 years of battling and surviving prostate cancer, a Unitarian Universalist, troubadour poet, songster, and minister at large was discovered to have a couple of sizable and cancerous brain tumors. He is now under hospice care at his home in Carmel, California, in the Big Sur Hills. His weekly mailings no longer go out, but I did get a note that his daughter posted to the line. I just picked this up this morning, as a matter of fact. I'll read just a few words of it. "We don't know how long we will have together, a week, a month, who knows, but we are truly enjoying each day, however it comes. I'm embracing this time with Dad, as I always have done, only now I hear and see far more. I'm paying attention to my memories, so they'll be rich and full of light. He still enjoys a good chuckle, and I do tease him quite a bit. As always, so many thank yous, and so much love I am returning." As sad as it was for me to receive this news, given the relationship Rick and I have developed over the past 8 to 10 years, there was gratitude mixed in with the sadness. I'm very glad he and I got his story told and into a book while there was still time to tell it. And I was especially glad we were able to be together back in January at the UU Church in Carmel to honor and pay tribute to his life and ministry and their Sunday service there, and a special evening program we did for him as well. I'm very glad we were able 2.5 years ago to have him here at our sanctuary for the service, what proved to be his final East Coast tour. It's early Easter morning in Carmel right now, about 7:30. I'm not sure the sun has even made its way over those high mountains out there that rise in the east along the Pacific coast. What I do know is that the odds of Rick seeing another Easter once this one has come and gone are pretty astronomical against it. So I thought I'd use one of his poems to frame up my Easter thoughts for today, and who knows, in the course of doing so, I might even touch on some of the things I would have said anyway this morning. This poem was written at a much earlier point in his life, and it's vintage Maston in that it combines a saucy and a jaunty kind of irreverence that he always seems to love to indulge himself in, with a little bit of wisdom that kind of sneaks up on you at the end. It's called On Butterfly Wings. "You know, for the life of me, I can't recall what happened last Good Friday. Christmas I can, because Mother got smashed and the baby, seeing his image distorted on the surface of 1,000 ornaments, cried all day. And on Easter it rained so that the candy hidden in the grass got sticky and we had to wash the ants off before we let the kids out. But somehow I miss Good Friday. Looking the other way, I guess, like I do. Muttering under my breath about the high cost of funerals and how the undertakers are bleeding us dry like vampires, not stopping to realize that we can't pay those guys enough to handle what scares us to death. I mean, if Aunt Maud bites the bag in my kitchen, you're going to find me outside in the yard, waiting for some weird cat to roll up in a long black vehicle and clean up the mess, cart the problem away, smiling all the while. Oh, I'll stop by the parlor Saturday afternoon, check the flowers out, have a quick look in the box. But then, I never was able to accept the gift graciously, and it's my loss. An old guru once told me that the only thing we really have to do in this life is die. And I think I shall repeat this statement over and over, 100 times each night before I go to sleep. Perhaps, if I could bring myself to believe it, I mean really believe it, And remember what happens on Good Friday. I just might come out and find myself some sunny Easter morning on butterfly wings rising. Well, I hate to dissect a poem that makes a pretty complete statement all by itself, but if I hadn't chosen the ministry for a career, there's a pretty good chance I'd have been an English teacher, so I hope you can indulge that side of me for a few minutes. It's one of the oldest of human themes, oldest of human truths, oldest of human paradoxes that Rick is waxing poetic about here. He pokes fun at his own avoidance or denial of death. Can't recall what happened on Good Friday. If Aunt Maud bites the bag in my kitchen, you're gonna find me outside in the yard. He puts in a good word for morticians. We can't pay those guys enough to handle what scares us to death. And then when he's gotten his humor out of that, which is also most fearful, he cuts to the chase. An old guru once told me the only thing we have to do in this life is die. And then he refers to this embrace of mortality as a gift. But adding a gift I was never able to accept graciously. But then, how many of us can? How many of us can accept our mortality as a gift to be received graciously? And then the concluding stanza is no more than a reminder that it is just such an embrace. If I can really believe and remember what happens on Good Friday, it is just such an embrace that then allows life to take on some of its deepest meanings and gives us some of its deepest joys. It's Easter morns on butterfly wings. Perhaps it is because this is so hard to believe, so hard for me to believe, this idea that the fullness of life emerges out of an encounter with the starkness of death. Perhaps it is because it is so hard to believe, that is why this theme is at the heart of most of the religions and many of the rituals and celebrations that we human beings have created for ourselves over the eons of human history. Our earliest ancestors created their rites and they created their ceremonies that would appeal to those gods and goddesses whom they believed would cause life to emerge again from a dead earth. They knew that without the resurrection of a seemingly dead earth, there would be no life. No life in the most literal sense for them. The very name that we give this holiday, Easter, comes from one of those goddesses of fertility, Estre, to whom our pagan predecessors appealed, made their petitions. And then this same theme is found on more human terms, in more human terms, in the legends and in the myths that gave rise to both the Judaic and the Christian faiths. And it's pretty ghastly stuff in some ways. I discovered last night I can still be hooked by the Ten Commandments. I actually stayed up too late watching that. Watching that green stuff, I don't know if you've seen that green thing comes down the street and all those poor firstborn Egyptians are dying right and left. Really, the firstborn sons, that's quite a story. The firstborn sons of the Egyptians had to die, even as the specter of death passed over the sons of the Israelites before the journey to a promised land, a new life, could get underway. Jesus had to die an excruciating kind of death before his followers could experience in one way or another, and in ways we'll never really know, but they could experience in some sense his risen presence and carry forth his message of radical and redeeming love. And so the Easter moment, the sense of a newness of life, the feeling of rising on butterfly wings, to use Rick's metaphor, all of this eventually comes out of an awareness of our mortality and the mortality of those whom we've known and loved and shared our lives with, whose lives touched ours deeply. And an Easter moment, or an Easter blessing, is also a time when life calls us back. Back from a time of loss or defeat, or from the deaths in life that inevitably come our way. And there's a challenge that goes with that call. It's a very simple one. Are we ready to respond when that call comes? It's true, you cannot rush a resurrection. If your life has been broken in some way, it doesn't quite work, as you may have experienced, this doesn't quite work to pretend that all is well and healed if that hasn't quite happened yet. Just as our earliest human ancestors did, we have to wait for the earth to come back to life. And I have to say, this particular year, that wait is getting pretty long. And in the same manner, this is one lesson I take from New England winters. In the same manner, we sometimes have to wait for life in its fullness to come back to us after a time of diminishment and loss. But when it's time to re-engage again, when life calls us back, we have to be ready, willing to respond and to act. So I guess what I'm saying with all this is there are resurrections we have to wait for, and there are also resurrections we have to create. Sometimes the two even overlap. One of my colleagues in the Unitarian Universalist Ministry, the Reverend Mark Harris, makes this point quite well, I think, with these words. We Unitarian Universalists celebrate the many resurrections of this season. We celebrate the glories of the earth when birds take to wing and crocuses force their way through the crust of snow to announce the arrival of spring. We celebrate the untold number of courageous individuals and groups who sacrifice their lives to liberate others from oppression and create a more just and loving world. We celebrate the ability of the human heart to overcome terrible personal tragedy or handicap and affirm once again the ability to love and excel where many others would have given up hope. Easter celebrates the times of witnessing, experiencing, and creating the resurrections of human life. Pay attention and note those three words right there at the end of that reading. Witnessing, experiencing, and creating. Some resurrections we witness, as I've just noted, seeing the earth and nature slowly work their way back to life. And that's the Easter blessing we simply and joyfully receive, knowing as we have to know that it will arrive on its own good time, time which we do not control. Some resurrections, second word, we experience. Such as when we experience the influence, the impact, the meaning that the lives of those loved ones whom we have lost continue to bestow upon us and lets us know that our loss is not a complete one after all. This too is an Easter blessing that will come if we give it time to arrive. It's one of the Easter blessings I experience at this time of year, as you heard me talking with the boys and girls here a little earlier, thinking about my uncle and baseball and books. And then there are the resurrections we create in the manner that I referred to a few moments ago. Times when we pick ourselves up after a personal defeat or disappointment, or a time of pain and grief, and decide that the life journey is still worth taking for the promises and the possibilities that it still holds out for us. These are the Easter moments and Easter blessings we create for ourselves, drawing upon the strength of our own human and spiritual resources. So on that note, I'm going to go back to another Rick Master poem as a way of drawing these thoughts to a close. This one was written Many, many years after the Butterfly Wings poem was written after he got his cancer diagnosis. The title he chose for this one is pretty simple and pretty stark. He just calls it Endline. I've always been a yin-yang, front-back, clear-blur, up-down, life-death kind of guy. My own particular duality being philosopher slash hypochondriac. Win-win characteristics when you've been diagnosed with a life-threatening disease. Finally, the hypochondriac has more than windmills to tilt with. The philosopher arming himself with exactly the proper petard. An explosive statement found in an email message beneath the signature of a cancer combatant's name. A perfect endline, wily and wise. Quote, I ask God, how much time do I have before I die? Enough to make a difference, God replies. Be it from God, from the spirit of life, from the inner stirrings of our minds and hearts and souls, wherever it is you get your messages from, that is the Easter message and the Easter blessing for each one of us today. It's who we are on this Easter morning and on all the mornings of our life that remain before us and that will greet us. We are people with enough time to make a difference. In a beautiful world that still remains tragically and horribly tainted by the evils of war and disease, human want, racism, environmental waste and degradation, we are people of faith with enough time to make a difference. In the liberal religious community, we continually seek to build here a place where lives can be transformed and minds can be made free. We are people with time to make a difference. And in the lives we're each living, lives with their unfinished business as well as their fullness, lives with their unhealed as well as their healed places, lives with their needs and hungers that are best and maybe only known to each one of you. We are each and all still people, still with time enough to make a difference in each of the lives we lead. So Good Friday is a reminder that our lives are not ours forever. And in a sense, that is good. Easter is a promise that life is still a joyous choice we can make. A hope-filled yes we can say for as long as we have breath. So on that note, a very blessed and happy Easter to each of you.